Welcome to Pastures of Plenty, a history of California farm workers. Destination, El Norte. I'm your host, Luis Valdez. Today, the word farm worker has become almost synonymous with the word Mexican. In this program, we'll hear the story of how that came to be and why this tale affects all of us. One-third of all farm workers in the U.S. live in California. Almost all were born in Mexico, and the majority lack legal working papers. Any disruption in the flow of these workers means a disruption to our food system. In 2006, some California farmers left food rotting on the trees for lack of workers. In this program, we'll explore the relationship between Mexico and the United States from the 1930s through the Bracero program. We'll also hear stories from people who founded and fought for the United Farm Workers Union. Here's producer Rachel Ann Goodman.
The United States had its first formal guest worker program with Mexico in 1917. Under a formal agreement between the two countries, 50,000 workers a year came from Mexico during the First World War when there was a labor shortage in the fields. Philip Martin is a UC professor of economics.
It ended badly. It ended with the Mexican government complaining about discrimination against Mexicans, especially in Texas. Lots of Mexicans came up and went into debt because under that program, farmers could charge for food and accommodation. And the way things worked, in some cases, people owed more money as they were leaving than what they had earned.
World War II prompted another labor shortage in California agriculture, and the U.S. and Mexican governments teamed up to bring in workers legally from Mexico. Frank Bardicky is a labor writer and historian from Watsonville, California, where many braceros came from Mexico to pick lettuce.
What the employers would do is they would go to El Centro, contract people from El Centro, and bring them here, and then just leave them in the barracks, only give them 15, 20, 25 hours a week of work, but they were making money off the room and board. The point I want to make is about for the city of Watsonville, what you have is a kind of semi-apartheid system because what you have is that the major work in town is being done by single men who come here just for the season, who don't bring their families with them, and then when the season's over, they go back to Mexico.
Yo crecí en Michoacán, México.
Ignacio Gómez Rodríguez came to California from the state of Michoacán as a young man in the 1950s to work in the Salinas lettuce fields.
I came to the U.S. in 1959 as a bracero.
Siempre en México, en todas las comunidades pequeñas,
the small communities in Mexico would always get a notice from abroad saying that they needed bracero workers.
Nada de esto, nada más trabajo.
Well, the biggest promise of the program was just to come here and work, and that was basically it, come here to work. No salary or no wage promise when we first got the notice. We were just offered work, work, and work.
La primera vez que vine yo a Estados Unidos, viene uno como todo joven.
When I first came, I came with the illusions that every young man has. I had dreams and aspirations and promises that I have made to myself and to my family members. So I was very excited and very anxious to start working.
Un día típico del algodón, esa, pues, la ropa la teníamos mojada.
I mean, a typical day for us picking cotton was drenched in sweat. Most cotton plants are up to 6 feet tall. Some were smaller, but for the most part, they're very tall plants. And having the hot sun beaming over us and the humidity of the ground under us would just make us drenched in sweat.
La mayoría de gente que veníamos en ese tiempo.
A lot of us who came here were really unaware of the circumstances or the situations. We were, as you say, uncultured. None of us had really any education. So, in a sense, the government really took advantage of our innocence.
The Mexican government was supposed to keep 10% of the braceros' income to be returned after their contracts were complete. This never happened. The Mexican bank, which held nearly $1 billion of their money, has since been dissolved. Ignacio Gomez Rodriguez joined a federal class action lawsuit in 2001 with other ex-braceros, trying to recoup their wages. Ignacio Gomez is worried a new guest worker program might exploit workers the same way.
Yo primero que nada quisiera esto decir.
They should really focus on giving us what they owe us, our 10% back, before they begin a new program. Secondly, once they begin a new program, they should really try to organize it in a way where people get what they deserve.
No importa que sean mexicanos o de otros países.
Things haven't gotten better.
Things
are the same for the migrant worker. We're still being taken advantage of. They're still being robbed of this innocence, but then they keep paying us really low wages.
Bueno, primero que nada necesitamos de que la gente nos vean como igual. ¿Por qué él tiene que ganar más que tú? Si es una persona igual que tú, si hacen el mismo trabajo, ¿por qué tiene que
We should all be treated as equals, and that's the biggest problem. Not as an old Joe or this person and that person. There's too many distinctions between people right now, and we all feel the same. We all act the same. We should be paid the same, and it shouldn't be based on color or race or age. We're all people, and we want to get paid as people.
Hay tantas cosas que uno ha vivido, pero entre ellas también hay que decir algo bueno.
One should also remember the positive aspects behind it, and the positive aspect for me was helping my family when I was a bracero.
Gomez continues his quest for the money owed to him. He and other braceros have held rallies, reunions, and marches in an effort to bring attention to their cause. Just 20 miles from where Ignacio Gomez first worked in the Salinas lettuce fields, the story of Leon Ventura was unfolding in a similar way. He came to the Central Coast farming town of Watsonville as part of the Bracero program.
My name is Leon Ventura, and I was born on Jalisco, almost by the west coast, close to Puerto Vallarta. And I came back as a bracero on the 50s, for about 2 years.
How did you hear about the Bracero program?
Well, it was very, very, everybody was knew about it in Mexico by that time. By that time, before that, was on the 40s, was when the United States were at war. There were a lot of people came from Mexico to work on the fields and also on the railroad tracks. And by the 50s, it was almost 100% on the fields. Well, the roughest part of the Bracero program was that you had to live in barracks with another 50 people. Some were noisy, some were drunk, some were good people. There is all, sometimes it was hard to get a good night's sleep. The way they were in those days, when they come, they brought somebody in, they had to give him a place to stay, blankets, bed, doctor care, and everything. And now the way these people are treating the people, they are not even doing nothing of that. They are on their own, and they go and live sometimes, not all of it, on very, very poor conditions.
One day, while watching his crew pack lettuce into boxes, he had an idea for speeding up the process.
Got with my wife one day, and I thought, we're going to make a lettuce packer. And I got a box, empty carton box, and put it on another empty box and start working with it. The first time that we did it, we did it with toilet plungers.
He went home and sketched a design for a mobile lettuce packing machine, which would enable a crew of 30 workers to trim, bag, and load their lettuce into boxes, putting it onto a conveyor belt.
There was a man working on the shop, on the fabrication shop for the company. His name was Javier Infante. Very good friend, very intelligent man, so I told him my project. And I showed him how I did it, and we started working on it. It was a success. They're still using it. It's a very, very clean operation. The machine is still working, and I think the company still gets the benefit of it.
Leon Ventura had become an inventor, not the usual path for a bracero. On an early spring day, at the height of the lettuce harvest, I go to watch his machine in action. It's the middle of the lettuce harvest here in the Salinas Valley, and large crews of about 40 workers are busy working with a machine that helps them package the lettuce into plastic bags. There are some 30 people standing in front of chutes, and very fast, they clip off the outer leaves of the lettuce, lop off the bottom, put it in a bag, and put it on a conveyor belt, which brings it up to a box. Each of them is filling two or three boxes apiece. There are also workers at the top of this machine, five or six of them, and as the bag lettuce comes up the chute, they are helping put it in boxes. There's also boxers that are quickly assembling cardboard boxes with Dole on the front. There are a few women in the field, but mostly men. It takes each person about 30 seconds to trim a bag of lettuce. They have a knife in their hand and to put it in a bag and put it on the chute.
When the market is good, they can take 20 acres and harvest it in one day. What you're seeing here is iceberg lettuce. This lettuce is about, I guess, maybe a couple of weeks from harvest.
Leon Ventura raised three daughters on his farmworker salary. One of them became a lawyer, then a city councilwoman, then the mayor of Watsonville. Her name is Ana Ventura Ferris.
What I'm most proud of, well, many things, but the fact that he had a fourth grade education in Mexico. And he would joke and say, imagine if I went to high school, you know, what he would have done. But how he, you know, progressed in the company to become, you know, the vice president of harvesting. Most people did not progress that way.
Leon Ventura is now retired, living in a comfortable ranch house overlooking the fields where he used to work. Many former braceros like Leon Ventura became U.S. citizens after their contracts were finished. After a short break, we'll hear the story of a labor contractor whose role as middleman in the bracero program had him walking a tightrope between two worlds. You're listening to Pastors of Plenty. I'm Rachel Ann Goodman. One of the most controversial jobs in agriculture is the labor contractor, who often had the reputation of shortchanging his workers. In the 1950s, Clemente Llano, a Mexican immigrant himself, started a business bringing in braceros to the country and hiring them out to local farmers. I visited with him at a family barbecue at his home near Isleton on the Sacramento Delta, close to his 80th birthday.
There wasn't enough labor to go around, so then I proposed to the growers that we go into the bracero program. At that time, tomatoes were picked by hand. Everything was done by hand. There was no machines. I would go down and recruit. In order to have these men, you had to house them, feed them, transport them. Most of the ones that came, they were middle-aged family people that came, worked, and they were just as eager to go home. They came from rural areas. They were agricultural workers themselves and what have you.
Vuela paloma, lleva esta carta a donde está mi querer. Dile que vuelva.
Clemente's daughter, Cynthia Llano, remembers helping her dad serve huge meals down at the labor camp. She says, despite tensions over wages, the braceros respected her father because he was fair and he spoke their language.
I always felt my dad was a loyal, you know, good person. He always fed them well. He always paid them on time. And he would have to charge them, like, rent and, you know, for meals and stuff like that and deduct that from their paycheck. But I always knew that it was on the up and up. And I felt like people kept coming back here. Don't you think people came back here to you
after,
because they knew you were
the,
a good,
after the
honest person?
Bracero program was terminated. Why, then what we would get in a camp was domestic workers.
And I think about what you did, Dad, was that you were this, you were able to speak to the Mexican farm workers and also communicate in English with the American growers. There wasn't a lot of that.
Clem Llano says a new guest worker program would allow those who don't want to become citizens to come here and work legally.
Man that wants to come and work goes, shows that he's a worker. Every Mexican that you talk to that has immigrated and is legally here and immigrated, in his own mind, when the day comes, he's going to go back to Mexico. He only came here to get a head start, to get his little home fixed, and to do this, and then he's going to go back to Mexico.
These days, Clemente Llano is retired and spends time tending his pear orchard and visiting with his large family. Author Frank Bardicky says the Bracero program's true accomplishment was to keep farm wages down for 20 years and deny citizenship to workers.
When the Bracero program started, wages were around 60 cents an hour. When the Bracero program ends in 1965, it's $1.25 an hour. So if you think about inflation between 60 cents an hour and $1.25 an hour, wages were actually falling in that period. And if you think of what period we're talking about, 1940 to 1964, that's a period when the U.S. working class, the unionized U.S. working class, was actually making more money. So that's when farm worker wages fall dramatically. And the way the Bracero program worked is the growers were supposedly obligated to pay what they called a prevailing wage. That was the language. But the prevailing wage was just what the grower said it was. So it wasn't that there was a shortage of labor around here. It's that the labor was all being done by braceros.
By the 1950s, the U.S. government was beginning to feel the heat from critics and made this movie defending the bracero program.
Yes, with the domestic supply of farm labor being inadequate, braceros are a must. But some people say to the farmer,
well, make the pay high enough and you'll pull in all the domestic labor you need.
The fact is that farm wages have gone up steadily for many years, but we still don't have enough seasonal domestic labor willing to do this kind of work. Conclusion: unless we have braceros to fill the gap, many stoop labor crops will be forced out of American agriculture.
Some industries complained that agriculture was getting an unfair labor subsidy. But for many, the Bracero program was a betrayal of the American promise that hard work was the immigrant's ticket to citizenship. UC Davis economics professor Philip Martin.
Some people oppose the Bracero program on the grounds that as a nation of immigrants, temporary workers who had to return were not the American tradition. Unions opposed the Bracero program because they said, as captive workers, braceros were willing to work for lower wages, made it impossible for U.S. workers to form effective unions.
Congress finally terminated the Bracero program in 1964 and sent the braceros back to Mexico. When it did, says Frank Bardicky, it looked the other way as thousands returned to the U.S. without papers.
The unofficial policy in the United States at the end of the Bracero program in 1965 is to open the borders unofficially. And so what happened was braceros came back either as green carters, as white carters, or as people without papers, or as illegals, as they were called.
Critics of illegal immigration today often overlook the fact that the biggest recruitment of Mexican workers in history was begun by the United States during the Bracero program. Again, Dr. Martin.
There was a network phenomenon at work, and that is when people did return with money, very soon there were far more people wanting to come north than there were slots available for them. The United States did set the wheels in motion. There's no two ways about it. The United States government set the wheels in motion at the behest of Western growers who wanted to continue to produce fruits and vegetables for distant markets.
In the late 1960s, growers who maintained their Bracero connections wanted to keep the old system of migrant labor alive, despite the fact that many farmworker families had decided to stay and become citizens.
So then when the Bracero program ends, the city fathers tried to keep people migrant. They tried to reproduce the same situation. There's a housing project out here, the Buena Vista Camp, outside of town, which was built in that period. And it was built so that it's closed down 6 months out of the year. And that was because the dream was, when it was built, that people would just come here for the harvest and then they would move on. Well, now it's totally ludicrous. I mean, now people migrate from the Buena Vista Camp to garages in town, or they migrate to the Central Valley or something like that.
During the 20 years of the Bracero program, some 4.6 million Mexicans, mostly men, were admitted legally to work in 26 states. But another 4.9 million were caught illegally crossing the border. In other words, more people decided it was better to risk getting caught by La Migra, the Border Patrol, than file paperwork and live beholden to one grower only, as the Braceros did.
A temporary worker program is vital to securing our border. By creating a separate legal channel for those entering America to do an honest day's labor, we would dramatically reduce the number of people trying to sneak back and forth across the border.
As the new Congress continues to debate a guest worker program, Dr. Martin says we might want to review what went wrong last time.
We have to make sure that any guest worker program we develop includes the seeds of or mechanisms to make sure that it doesn't have the same fate as most other programs. That is, they tend to get longer and last longer than originally anticipated.
Farm wages were stagnant in the 1960s, lagging far behind other jobs. The civil rights movement in the South was just picking up steam. And in California, a Catholic Charities worker named Cesar Chavez, who was campaigning for health care for Latinos, saw that the time was ripe for a change in the fields.
En las ciudades y campos, la esperanza nunca muere. Ya lo dijo César Chávez, compañeros, si se puede. En huelgas, boicots y marchas, los campesinos se entregan. Levantan banderas rojas y con el águila negra de la no fresno.
After so many groups had tried and failed to organize farm workers, from the Wobblies in the teens to the Filipinos and Dust Bowl migrants in the 30s, at last the confluence of politics, strategy, and frustration gave birth to a movement that would make a real difference in the lives of America's farm workers. Here's historian Richard Stephen Street.
The history of farm labor organizing up to 1965 is that it's a graveyard of dead farm worker unions. In your mind's eye, you can picture them, little tombstones dotting the farm worker graveyard with the acronyms on them. Cannery and Agricultural Workers Industrial Union, Trade Union Unity Lead, Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee. There are dozens of them, and they all failed. And that's the history of farm labor union organizing up to the Delano Grape Strike. And then along comes Cesar Chavez and the Delano Grape Strike, and they succeed. And there are many reasons why they succeeded and others had failed before them. One of the most important being the development of the grape boycott, which was a very dramatic tactical change that shifted the scene of conflict away from the fields out into the general public and put pressure on an entire industry.
Today, Cesar Chavez is portrayed as a saint, a martyr, a humble peasant, and a great civil rights leader. But the man was more complicated than his media image. Perhaps this interview, done by Studs Terkel with a young Cesar Chavez in 1972, gives a better view into what inspired Chavez to devote his life to farm workers. He explains that during the Depression, his father lost their farm in Yuma, Arizona, and turned to the migrant farming life. The most bitter experiences were getting robbed by unscrupulous labor contractors.
So one morning, my father made the resolution that no more work. If he doesn't pay us right now, we won't work. So we got in the car and went over to see him. When we got there, the house was empty. He had left. And so we went to the winery, and the winery says, well, we're not, you know, we paid him. And they showed us where they had paid this man, but this man had taken our money. So we're completely broke. And we moved, borrowed some money, and moved down to West Fresno County to a cotton. In those days, a lot of the cotton was picked by hand, you know, so went to his camp and got there, and it began to rain, and we couldn't work. The following year, we had what I consider to be one of the worst experiences was we got stranded up in Oxnard. Oxnard is the lemon center, one of the large lemon growing areas. There we couldn't get a house, so we got a lot right at the end of this subdivision and put up a little tent. So we got a tent that was just a little cover over a bed. That was our house. And it used to rain on at night, you know, laying there and damp and cold and raining. And the fact that we were kids, you know, we were, at that point you can take all kinds of punishment. But I remember sticking out our hands, you know, out of the covers into the rain, you know, to get our hands wet.
In all the stories of the legendary Cesar Chavez, what might have been overlooked were the voices of the people who quietly and loyally worked alongside him. Filipino labor leader Andy Imetan was one of the original vice presidents of the United Farm Workers.
My name is Andy Imetan. I was one of the vice presidents of Cesar Chavez in the early years of the union organizing. We started the strike in Delano.
On September 8, 1965, the Agricultural Workers Organizing Committee, a largely Filipino labor group, called a strike, and 3,500 Filipino grape workers walked out during the harvest. There were another 3,000 Mexican workers who refused to join them, much to the frustration of the strike organizers, among them Andy Imetan.
The demand was the same. $1.40 an hour, 25 cents a box, better living condition. There were crews that were only drinking from one cup for the whole crew. Water, you know, just one cup all day long. And also, there were no toilets in the field.
At first, Mexicans were crossing the picket lines to go to work, allowing the harvest to continue. Racial tensions between the two groups were running higher than usual, and that rift was being exploited.
That's why the growers were able to rule without question the fields, because he will intrigue one group against the other. He will say the Mexicans are dirty Mexicans and they are lazy and all that kind, and you guys are good, you know, and all that kind of thing. So they were successful, huh? Because they will tell the Mexicans the Filipinos are homosexual, some of them. See, they are not married.
Andy Imetan and Larry Itliong finally decided it was time to call for help. They phoned up Cesar Chavez, who was leading Mexican farm workers under the Red Eagle banner of the National Farm Workers Association, to ask for his help persuading Mexicans not to cross the picket line.
But when this happened, and we talked to Cesar, and Cesar came, and he was able to communicate with the Mexican workers, it became a different story. See, the growers began to really worry when we begin to realize that the Mexicans were also good people like us. You know, they have also the same kind of dream. They are also human beings, and it was a different story. And we fought with the same cause, and Cesar Chavez was shouting, "Welga, welga!" over there in the field. And then the Filipinos begin to join the Welga, Welga too, see?
biggest grower in Delano, is bringing in 2 busloads of new employees. An emergency meeting is called, and Tony Mendez speaks.
Okay, now, first of all, Giorgio is using a lot of women this year to try and break our strike, and they do not have enough employees in this camp in Delano. So they are bringing between 75 to 100, which will be a first of a series of events that Giorgio will try to do to break this strike. We don't want to harass these women when they get here. We want to treat them like human beings. We want to let them know that we're non-violent, that we're going to win this strike, and we have to look confident for
On
this.
September 16th, Mexican Independence Day, the NFWA, with 1,200 member families, voted to join the Delano grape strike. The two groups would merge into the UFW, the United Farm Workers. The strike would last 5 years and draw the attention of the nation to the plight of farm workers. When the Filipino contingent marched with Cesar Chavez from Delano to Sacramento the next year, local detractors threw stones at both groups.
Although when we went out of Delano, we were called all kinds of names, communists, dirty Mexicans, whatever, go, don't come back anymore, you know, when we went through the main street.
This walk is a long walk, but it makes me feel it's like a walk to justice, to real humanity.
The Chicanos in the different towns that we went into begin to develop courage, and they begin to come out also with us, you know. We were more than 10,000 people.
The media, too, was taking notice, as were politicians like Robert F. Kennedy.
When your children and grandchildren take their place in America, going to high school and college, taking good jobs at good pay, when you look at them, you will say, I did this, I was there, at the point of difficulty and danger. And though you may be old and bent for many years of hard labor, no man will stand taller than you when you say, I marched with Cesar Chavez.
Viva la huelga!
After a short break, we'll hear about the UFW grape boycott and how a theater company was born out of the passion of the farm worker movement.